Hey, what is happening, people? Thank you so much for joining me today on Vicious Whispers with Mark Tullius. It's been a little while since I've been on. I took off the last 2.5 weeks, just kind of disappeared. Haven't been posting on social media, haven't been doing anything, just been enjoying life, dealing with shit over here and working. So, it's always a struggle to justify taking the time to do this. But I do realize it's a good thing. It's good for me to talk about all this shit because I don't hang out with a lot of people. And a lot of people don't want to hear my fucking bitching. But if you guys want to listen to it, awesome. What has been going on? Oh, what started all this? So I was all pumped. After my last episode, I was talking about I was going to find a publisher and do all this shit. I came home, it was Monday morning, all ready to go, and then my computer fucking crashed. And I could not get it to work, so I went and fucking got a new one. Which is great, like that's a good problem to have, except having to transfer everything over, reinstall all this shit. Still can't get the printer hooked up. I got the Geek Squad coming over Thursday, they were supposed to be here yesterday. Fucking all little bullshit problems. But over the last couple weeks, I've been going through all those publishers, trying to find the right agent. I went on Publishers Marketplace. I hadn't done anything like this in years. I think the last time I was actively looking for an agent was before Brightside. And with Brightside, I said, fuck it, because I was tired of getting rejected. I knew I had something good, or I believed I had something good. And that it would do well. Like if I just kept writing, eventually my shit will take off. And I still have that belief, but I also realize how much more powerful it would be and how much easier it would be if I had an agent to do all this shit for me. So I can focus on the writing, the podcast and other shit like that and not worry so much about trying to market and all the other aspects. So what was kind of cool about it was, it was definitely time consuming going through each of the profiles, agent profiles on Publishers Marketplace, trying to see whether or not they'd be a good fit. One of the nice things with me is if they were Christian fiction, I see those words under shit that they promote. And so I was like, okay, they probably won't like me. That probably won't be a good fit. But the ones that do horror, sci-fi, anything dark, anything looking for anti-heroes, those are more up my alley. So what I did on the first pass, shit, I don't know how many I went through all together, but I think there were probably, I don't know, let's say I fucking had 100 after my first pass that were potential. And then I went back through and I realized, okay, let's find the ones that are right. Let's find the ones that I want. What's the best fit? Before, when I was submitting to agents when I first started, I would just send it out to anyone, just hoping that someone would want me. So hopefully someone would want me. It doesn't matter if they're a big agent, small agent, whatever. But now I'm looking at things a little bit differently. I believe I've proven that I am a good writer through reviews from Kirkus and from readers and all that. I was like, okay, that's enough proof. It's sometimes difficult for me to say that and to actually believe it. My own worst critic all the time. But now looking at that stuff, I was like, okay, here's my proof that I am, you know, at least a good writer, if nothing else. And I believe that an agent could do a lot with what I have out there and what I'm going to be producing. I am going to be producing quite a lot. So that is a nice thing to be feeling. The other thing that's been going on the last 2 weeks is Beyond Brightside. I got a little held up on chapter 27. That is the final night in the book. So it's 7 nights. The book actually starts on night 7, which is a present scene. So it starts at the end of the book. So the start of act 1, we see the start of night 7. Start of act 2, we go into a little bit of night 7. And then the start of act 3, which is chapter 27. We go into the rest of chapter 27, I mean, the rest of night 7. And I had written a little bit for those first two acts, but I also wrote a note to myself saying, don't do the present scenes until this book is finished, because I won't have known, like, there was no way for me to know exactly where this main character was going to be at that point in the book until I fucking wrote it. So I had some rough ideas, and most of them stayed. So the other thing was, I wasn't sure exactly what was going to be going on relationship-wise between the main character and the female in the room, in the shack. So I got to explore that a little bit this week, and it was good. And I think it would, I think it all makes sense. I think the readers should enjoy it. It's funny, I was in my cognitive therapy, actually my psychotherapy, talking with my therapist, and some of it was about Brightside, Beyond Brightside, and the difficulty with marching my character to his death. And in fact, I was just talking with my daughter about it too earlier in the morning, that I was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't let this guy die. Maybe I should not let my main character actually die. Everything is leading up to him dying. He's sick. He's got an infection. He's been shot. He's things are not bad. Everyone, he's the most wanted man in America. Odds are against him. And she's like, no, he should die. She's like, every book, the hero always manages to live at the end. And she's like, don't do what everyone else does. And I was like, yeah, you're probably right. But I was talking about with my therapist and just how difficult it can be. I don't have a problem killing off characters in my short stories. That's never been a problem with protagonists. Yeah, but to kill off a main character in a novel is a lot harder to do, I think. And it also lets me know, like, but the nice thing is, this will be done. Brightside will be finished after this book. If he dies, maybe I'll change my mind. You guys don't know. And this is so far away, I don't think it's going to be a fucking spoiler. So, we don't know. Maybe he'll live, maybe he'll die. We'll see. You know, I change my mind all the fucking time. But as far as what's going on right now, I have 3 more chapters. This is the exciting conclusion. Once I am done with those 3, I will go back through for my rewrite and fill everything in, pump it up, give it to my editor, and that's when I will start submitting it to agents. I'll start the agent process a little bit before that, but only after I have the first like 50 pages completely cleaned up the way I think they're going to go. So that's what I have been working on. That's been my focus. I've been playing around a little bit with short stories. We still have that collection that's going to be worked on. My father, who's my final editor, that's what he did it for his job. He was an editor all his life and an English teacher for part of it. He's going through, I'm having him see which stories he thinks are strong enough, which ones are not, and how we might fix them up, along with all the other little corrections he's making. So it's cool. It's fun having him on that, and hopefully I will get those back soon. So that'll be another fun project that will be out this year. And then after that, I am going to be digging into my brain book. That'll be the topic of this next podcast, and I promise I'll put it up next week for sure. I'm going to actually record it today, probably. Might even change my shirt so you don't realize fucking it was just done like 10 minutes later. But it is a whole other subject, and I want to think about that separately. But for this one, yeah, that's pretty much it. The other thing I've been doing too, I think I mentioned I was going to see someone. I often talk about my problem with jiu-jitsu. I'll jump back into it. It feels awesome. I feel like I'm doing pretty good. And then I'm out for like a week or two because my neck's fucked up, my shoulder's fucked up, my low back hurts. And I realized that I need to do strength and conditioning beforehand. I need to fix the problems that are the problem areas that are weak. If I do that, it shouldn't be an issue. So I went to see this guy, Eric Bravo. It's Back to Basics Training. I met him a couple months ago and had for sure wanted, like, I was very impressed with him and his knowledge. I knew he'd be good. It was just a matter of actually getting in there and doing it. And so I went in last week. We did a full, he tested everything to see where I was. And I was assuming that my low back was going to be the problem. That's what's been hurting a lot. But after running me through everything, it's my right shoulder. That's the number one priority, is because it's causing a lot of problems. It definitely has. I was feeling good about it. Like, I'm able to do all this stuff in yoga, but lots of the things I've been doing have I've been doing incorrectly, or they've been, I should have been modifying them because they've been putting too much stress on my shoulder. It's impinged right now. I probably have some rotator cuff injuries going on, some little tears. And so today I go for an hour-long massage just on my right shoulder. We'll see how that goes. It's supposed to be really painful. And then we're just gonna go from there. So I'm gonna really address my, we're addressing my low back, my shoulder, and neck. And if I get those fixed, maybe I will be able to return to jiu-jitsu on a more regular basis. It's what I want to do this summer. I want to do yoga and jiu-jitsu with the kids, and nice and relaxed, and just so that's the goal. Hopefully Eric will help me with that. And yeah, so far it seems promising. I also just finished doing 3 days of privates with Jovan, the owner of Downy Yoga, and those have been awesome because that's where I really got to see not only new things that I could do for my back, but fixing my form for yoga and realizing how much extra stress I was putting on my low back and my sacrum. So I had to expand my widen out my stance on, in certain poses, and then there's different things that I had to do. So overall, it was awesome. I learned a ton. I'm going to apply a lot of it. It's already making a big difference. And the nice thing is knowing, okay, I am no longer jacking myself up by doing these things. So that helped a lot. But yeah, so that's it. So just trying to take care of my body, get it ready for summer. Not like bathing suit ready for summer, but so I can actually move around and do shit and not be groaning and saying, oh, fuck my back and my shoulder or whatever else. So that is what I am trying to do. I wasn't sure about what we were going to read today. Last episode, I was talking about maybe I would just narrate each of the short stories. I haven't gotten those back from my father yet, and that takes a little bit of work, and I don't really have the time for it. So I'm gonna make you motherfuckers wait. But in the meantime, I wanted to do pointing the wrong way. I want to do one from 25 Perfect Days. We're gonna do the first story in that. The real audiobook you can get everywhere. That's narrated by my friend Dave Thompson. But on this one, I just narrated it. This first short story is one of my favorites. It was written. It's actually one of my first published stories too. I sold it to a horror magazine. I don't remember what. A long time ago. So most of the short stories in 25 Perfect Days were written as horror stories. When I describe the book, it's definitely a dystopian. 25 short stories, actually 30 for the 25 plus 5 more, that are all blended in together. They're all connected somehow. This is the first one. If you guys are interested in, after you hear it, you might want to check out the little video my friend Cheyenne made. She put out a short film a couple years ago, probably like 5 or 6 years ago now. And my daughter makes a little cameo in it, which is kind of cool. Also kind of creepy because she's a little kid that dies in it. Ah, fuck, I shouldn't have told you she dies. Okay, that may or may not die in it. So anyhow, check that out. You can see that on my YouTube channel. Just put in 5 minutes alone, Tullius. For those of you that are heavy metal fans, you probably guessed where that title came from. It's a Pantera song. Awesome song. That is one of the, I mean, that's where I got that idea. I was like, okay, being able to spend 5 minutes alone in a room with someone that has harmed you or your family, that'd be pretty powerful. Something I used to always want to do, writing the story and rewriting it, definitely changed the way I felt about it, I think. And so hopefully you will, when you're listening to it, maybe you'll think about what you would do and if, and then rethink about it. Like, okay, is that really how I would respond if I was really in this room? If it was really me, if that was really my daughter, what would I do? And it might be easy for you to answer. It might be a little difficult. Who knows? But anyways, hopefully you guys enjoy the story, and then I will be back next week. We'll talk a little bit more about the traumatic brain injury book I'm working on, why I'm a little bit scared about writing it, and all that kind of fun stuff. And then that story we'll be playing on that one is Twisted Memory, which is from Twisted Reunion, and a little bit about the fear of losing your mind. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. Hope you guys enjoy the story. Have a fabulous week, and I will talk to you later. Peace.
Five Minutes Alone, August 19th, 2036. How much damage could Michael really do in 5 minutes? It's not like he was launching a nuclear attack or sitting behind the wheel of a semi plowed into pedestrians. He just had to stand in a room. An 8x10 concrete cell. It'd be over in a blink. Conference calls at his office allotted more time for being on hold. There was nothing to worry about. If this meant closure, it was worth every second. That's all Sarah wanted, after all. For the twins. For the family. They needed to move on. Sarah's voice came barreling up the stairs saying breakfast was ready. Michael couldn't remember the last time he'd heard that. Couldn't remember the last time he'd had an awakening to her staring at the wall, lying there until the day was nearly done. Michael threw off the covers. He smelled bacon and coffee. Bypassing his work suits, Michael slipped on a pair of jeans and a polo and headed downstairs. Sarah was behind the stove in an apron, her hair pulled back in a ponytail, the way Michael remembered her, looking like a mom. "It smells great," he said. Sarah scooped sizzling strips onto a plate, blotted them with a paper towel to soak up the grease. "You talked to your boss, right?" Sarah set the plate onto the kitchen table. "Yeah." "I just really didn't want anyone calling today." Michael took a seat and poured a glass of orange juice. "They won't. And I talked to the boy's principal, too. It won't even count as a sick day." "Good." Sarah wiped her hands on her apron. "Boys, come on. We're going to be late." Like they were waiting outside the door, the 15-year-old twins walked in and took their places. Justin to his father's left, Jeremy to the right. Black pants, black shirts, no words. Michael started to think the family might not be ready for this, but as if she was reading his mind, Sarah pointed at his shirt. "You're not really wearing that, are you?" Michael realized he was the only one in white. Not exactly an appropriate color for the occasion. "I'll change after we eat." Sarah pulled off her apron, took a seat. She was wearing the black dress she wore for Jenny's 8th grade graduation. The dress Michael teased her about because she was just like the other parents, acting like it was some big deal. Sarah asked the boys if they liked their eggs. They gave little nods. Sarah didn't respond, didn't touch her food. She just sat there, staring at her empty juice glass. Michael told himself it'd get easier. After breakfast, the 2-hour ride to San Angeles was quiet. Only Sarah spoke, and only once. She said, "This is good. This is gonna be good." When they got to New Parker Center, Michael kept the doors locked. "There's something I have to say." Sarah pulled on the handle. "We've already discussed this. Open it." "Yeah, Dad." Jeremy sat up and glared in the rear view, his eyes the size of golf balls. "You promised." Michael didn't know if that was true. He couldn't remember promising, but he couldn't remember not promising either. It'd been like that lately. Michael's recent memory had become a thick fog, and as always, he was too exhausted to try to cut through it. Instead, he just wondered what kind of father would promise his children something like this, and unlocked everyone's door. The cop at the desk signed them in, told them to be sure to keep track of the time. 5 minutes each, not a second more. Sarah grabbed the pen, signed her name. They had agreed she could go first. A uniformed officer had led Sarah away. The desk cop pointed Michael and the boys across the hall. Someone will come for you. The waiting room was cold and small, the floor and walls a dull white. The boys were on the little couch. Jeremy sat with his fists pushed together, his steel-toed boot tap, tap, tapping. Michael wondered if Sarah had bought them just for today. Justin sat hunched over too, but different, like there should be a bucket between his feet. Michael felt he should ask if they were okay, give the boys a chance to back out. But Sarah said they had the right. What if it had been his sister? Michael didn't have a sister, but he understood what she meant. This would give them a little control, help them move past this. Michael locked eyes on the clock. 4 minutes past nine. A cop called Michael's name from the doorway. He got up without saying a word to the boys. The elevator took him down to an unmarked floor and a long hallway, the fluorescent lights and ceramic tiles part of the original building. They turned right at the next hallway. Sarah was down at the end. An officer led her by the elbow, her face speckled red, the same color dripping from her clenched fists. Sarah didn't even glance at Michael as they passed, ragged breasts seeping through her plastered smile beneath the vacant gaze. Michael's officer nudged him toward the door. "Mr. Adams, you've been advised of your rights. Do you have any questions?" He did have questions. What would he see on the other side? Did he really want to know what his wife was capable of? And what about the boys? The officer unlocked the door. Red globs covered the floor, fragments of Sarah's footprints. Michael started to ask if it could be cleaned, then realized how ridiculous that would be. "Mr. Adams, clock's ticking." Michael stepped inside. The dimly lit room smelled of blood and sweat. That's what he remembered about Jenny's birth. The complications. All that blood. It was 3 days before the doctor took Jenny out of the NICU bed and said they could hold her. Michael was scared because Jenny was so small, but once she was in his arms, he swore he'd never let go. He'd protect her from everything. But Michael failed. The monster who raped and murdered his baby girl sat naked, his hands cuffed to the top of the table. Sarah had kept her word, but just barely. Olsen's eyes were swollen, but he could still open them. For a second, Michael thought this was the wrong guy. Olsen looked nothing like the family man with 5 adoring kids. Each of them had written Michael and Sarah at least once a week, begging them not to come today. They asked for mercy. They said none of this would bring Jenny back. Sarah burned every letter. The cell looked like the interrogation room from an old cop show. 3 bare metal walls. A 4th with a one-way mirror Sarah said she'd be behind. The only light flickered from the 60-watt bulb hanging over the table, where the naked monster looked like something out of a horror movie. Olsen's face oozed blood. His nose flattened and mushed to the left. The whites of his eyes were clouded red. His left ear hung on by a few ropes of skin. Michael sat across from Olsen and stared at his hands. The top of the right one was a dark purple mass, the cuffs mashed into the skin, looking like someone had slammed an anvil on it. Even if Olsen lived, it'd have to be amputated. But Olsen wasn't gonna live. If he'd made it past today, they'd still fry him tomorrow. That's what Michael kept telling himself. An electric timer was mounted on the wall next to the mirror. 30 seconds. Already gone. An electric timer was mounted on the wall next to the mirror. 30 seconds. Already gone. Olsen's attack on Jenny lasted 1 minute and 53 seconds. Some coward on the 3rd floor caught the whole thing on video. Below the timer was an iron stand that held a sledgehammer, a fireplace poker, and an aluminum baseball bat, smudged red on the end. Olson made a noise. It came out all mumbled through his broken jaw. Two teeth poked through his bottom lip. He was trying to speak, but Michael had heard enough of this prick's voice. During the trial, Olson made a full confession and cried the entire time. He said Jenny had smiled at him. He said he couldn't help himself. He was sick. Olson finally got out his words, clearer this time. "Finish it," he said. "Please." Michael closed his eyes and took a deep breath, tried to remember the last time he'd held Jenny. She was only 13. "Kill me." Michael banged the table and drove it into Olson's chest, pinned him to the wall. Michael jumped to his feet. "You don't get to decide." The timer said Michael at 3 minutes. He walked over, told himself to not pick up the poker, but there he was, pulling it out of the stand, careful not to cut himself on the razor-sharp hook and pointed tip. Olson moaned, and Michael watched the seconds tick away. If Michael hit him once, that'd be it. There'd be no stopping. At 2:42, Olson said, "She cried for you." Olson cocked his head, raised the pitch in his voice, mimicking some ditzy teenage girl. "My daddy, my daddy." Michael spun around. Olson leaned into it, but Michael let go of the handle and the poker flew past Olson's face, clanked off the wall. The timer hit Jenny's minute 53. The head of the sledgehammer was as wide as Michael's fist. One hit is all it would take. Finished. The boys wouldn't have to step foot in this room, lower themselves to this piece of shit. They wouldn't have to hear Olson's goddamn voice. Michael reached out, picked up the sledgehammer, and faced the mirror. The man staring back looked nothing like the man Michael had awakened as. The mirror thumped. It thumped again, Sarah pounding it over and over until Michael let the sledgehammer fall to the ground. The timer was down to 1:15. The moment Jenny had stopped fighting, and Olson slammed her head into the concrete. Each passing second was one less for Olson, a little closer to the death he deserved. Michael concentrated on the mirror. He saw the timer in the reflection. The buzzer rang. His boys would get their 5 minutes alone.